White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 462.
Right now, it feels a little bit more like Woodstock than it does a football game. It is a torrential downpour, and we are officially in a weather delay, and it has been raining like crazy. They have asked the fans to go underneath the seats here in the concourse area. Most of them have obliged. The student section, however, they have come with their game face on. They ain't budging one inch.
Coach Gene Chizik leading the team out of the tunnel and leading the fans in a chair. And I tell you what, this place is going to be something else tonight.
White Rocket Entertainment.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family. You are our Patreon.com family and we appreciate you all. I'm Van Allen Plexico and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, you had a really cool idea of something we could do. All right, let's back up a week. I had an idea a week ago. To do a sort of a fantasy matchup of 2004 versus 2010. I thought that that was a lot of fun, and it went pretty well. And you had an idea to actually take a real game and kind of cover it, a game from probably before we were doing the show, so before the glory days of 2012. 2012, yes. Forever may they live on in our archives at auwishbone.podbean.com, where nobody wants to go back and listen to those. But before 2012, Auburn had quite a few really good seasons. So what game are we going to talk about and dissect and discuss tonight?
The 2009 home game against West Virginia, also known as the Rain Game.
Awesome. And, you know, and there's so much around that game and in that game that's fun to talk about. But I have to say, for a season that ended, I believe, 8-5, I guess, didn't it? I think it ended 8-5.
I think so.
For a season ended that way, 2009 is one of my more favorite seasons in Auburn history. It's not like, you know, a top. It's in terms of winning, you know, it's not. But in terms of
you
just
have
like
positive memories of it.
Yeah. It's, in fact, I failed to do this, but I'm bringing it up now, the 2000 schedule. Yeah. They went, 8-5, 3-5 in the SEC. How can we consider a season where we went 3-5 in the SEC to be a great season? But in some ways it's the same way that we look back at the 1981 season and think of that as actually kind of a good season. We had a losing record that season, and yet we look at it in a positive way because A, the team was competitive in just about all the games, just like in 81, in 09, and two, it was a brand new, you know, coaching staff in both years and a breath of fresh air, and three, it had some games that were really closer than they ever should have been. And D, you could tell it was building towards something bigger the next couple of years. In the case of 1981, it was building toward 82 and 83 and making a run at the national championship and beating Alabama twice and all that. In what did you feel like before we even get into this game particularly, what did you feel like about 2009 that why do we look at it that way?
I think because there's hope, right? I mean, the Tuberville era had ended the year before with the Tony Franklin experience, and now we had a new coaching staff. We were very excited to have Gus as the offensive coordinator, and there was a new level of enthusiasm. And you know, the Tuberville era had been gone on a long time, and things had kind of gotten stale at the end. And it was great to be shaking things up and doing different things, and to kind of, also to kind of feel like we were on the cutting edge of some of this offense stuff, the spread offense stuff. So it was exciting. And the team was fun, and there was a lot of dramatic games, like the one we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah. And I think I was excited, too, for a couple of reasons. One was because, you know, under Tuberville, as great as those some of those years were, there was always kind of this sense that we were a defensive first team, and we would never blow teams out unless just by accident almost. And we would, you know, we'd go into the famed Tubber shell, you know, and just try to run the clock and everything. And that was all well and good, and you could respect that, and we look back on it fondly. But it was a nice breath of fresh air, particularly after the way the 2008 season played out. It was just so exciting to go from Tuberville's grinded-out, slow-going approach that he took to suddenly, you know, we're putting this razzmatazz offense on the field. We're doing all kind of crazy stuff. We're scoring big points. We have two big running backs rolling up and down the field. And there was just, and you know, there was a sense that while the defense wasn't there yet in 2009, with Chizik in charge, surely the defense would come around. And meanwhile, Gus just seemed to resurrect an offense from the dead going from 08 to 09 in much the same way he would do again going from 12 to 13. And so, you know, I know there are a lot of folks that listen that are not big fans of Gus Malzahn, and I get that. But you can't deny the fact that twice in Auburn history he has come in, and in his first year at Auburn after being somewhere else, he's taken an offense that was flatlining and made it exciting, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it was exciting. It was fun to watch this game again, to think about that offense, to see the offense in that form and how different it was.
Yeah, it really was. So so let's step back then. What is your overall plan for doing the games this way, and assuming we'll do another one and do more of them in the future and all that? What do you have in mind here?
So what I want to do is, again, go back to games before we had the podcast, because basically everything since 2012 we've done a podcast about.
Yes.
So to go back to games before that, watch the games, think about the games, read about the games, and then kind of talk about the games themselves, but also kind of around the games, kind of the meta of what's going on around the games, what they meant and what we thought about them at the time, and kind of how we feel about them now.
Yeah, and that's going to be fun. So all right, so you kind of broke us down an outline, and we filled in some details and stuff. So let's get on. Do we want to go ahead and get on into the game now? Is there anything else we want to talk about? Let's do it. All right. I will mention, by the way, that we got a recruit, right? A basketball recruit, Thor, the son of Odin, Lord of Asgard, is coming down to play for Auburn. That's pretty – I don't know how – if Thor is a four-star, man, what is that what does that make Iron Man? I don't know. If Thor is just a four-star, then Iron Man must be a three-star in this system. Who's a five-star?
He's a system player, man.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He can be confused by Loki's antics too easily. That's the problem. So, all right. So the 2009 West Virginia game, Auburn coming into this game was 2-0, and a couple of interesting things about it. This was game 3, September 19th, 2009. We were 2-0, and we had both of our running backs have 100-yard games in both games previous to this. We had Ben Tate, who had not even made 1,000 yards in 2008. And I remember when Curtis Looper came in as the running backs coach, one of the things he said was, we're guaranteed going to get Ben Tate 1,000 yards this year. And he didn't lie. I think he ended up with about 1,300 for the season. And then Ontario McCaleb was a freshman, came in, and they used him very judiciously because you don't want to run him up the middle. Oh, wait, 2012. But before 2012, you wanted to use him carefully and judiciously and not run him up the middle. And so it was kind of a very much of a thunder and lightning approach between between those two backs. And that was very exciting, too, because we had a nice kind of change-up approach at running back. Now, first up, let's talk about the coaching staff. This is Gene Chizik, who we've talked about many times in the past, coming back in 2009. And I guess just summarize, what were your thoughts about, because we talked a lot about me wanting Chizik and predicting it and everything, but and that's old news, but we haven't really talked much about how you felt about him being hired.
I mean, I had positive feelings about Chizik because of his time as the defensive coordinator. And I felt like he put together a good staff. Good recruiters and getting Gus as the offensive coordinator. I thought that was big. So, I was excited about the Chizik era. I thought it would be good. I felt optimistic about it. I felt like things were going in the right direction. And I felt like, again, I think recruiting kind of tailed off at the end of the Tuberville era. And I think he brought in a staff of very strong recruiters and hit the ground running and brought in some good recruits.
I always liked Chizik. I always had the sense that maybe there was just he's such a good guy that I always had a feeling that maybe you need to be a little bigger of a jerk to be a really top successful coach. Maybe that's Gus's problem too. They're both fairly good, nice guys, and maybe you have to be a Saban, you know, or a Mullen to really dominate in the SEC. I don't know. They're both really good guys, and maybe that's not good for them. In this situation. But so you had Chizik as the head coach, and then the offensive coordinator was Gus Malzahn, we brought in from Tulsa, I believe, where he had been just kicking butt. And then Ted Roof, who had been around for a while as a defensive coordinator at different places, comes in to run the defense for Chizik. Probably the most the biggest hire in terms of names that we got was our defensive line coach was Tracy Rocker. And he's, of course, a beloved former player from the mid-'80s. And then we had Trooper Taylor and Curtis Looper kind of come in together almost as a package deal. People forget Trooper Taylor wasn't just the receivers coach. He was the assistant head coach, which is kind of mind-boggling to think about now. And then Curtis Looper, cool thing I discovered today when I was doing a little research on these guys, Curtis Looper's birthday is the same as mine. He's just, I think, 2 years older. He was our running backs coach and our recruiting coordinator. And he certainly did a very good job bringing in some good players the next, few years. And then you had another Grimes. Jeff Grimes was the offensive line coach. Philip Lawley at corners. Tommy Thigpen at safeties. And old Kevin Yoxall. Those guys were all first-year coaches, but Yoxall was in his 10th year. He's another one of those like our Joe Witt, our linebacker coach, that was just around through multiple regimes. It's like he had naked pictures of somebody and they couldn't get rid of him. So there's your coaching staff, more or less. I might have left one or two others. And then another couple of things. We had a quarterback competition going on where you will recall that in 2007, our quarterback had been back and forth between Cody Burns and Cox, Brandon Cox. And then Cox graduated. Burns was a freshman in 7. And so in 8, Burns was pretty much the quarterback most of the year, but was not great. And so in 2009, Chris Todd beat him out. And this is the famous Cody goes and tells the team, let's all support Chris Todd. He won fair and square, which is one of the awesome things that Cody Burns has, many awesome things Cody Burns has done for us. So Chris Todd is your starting quarterback, but Cody played a lot. He played receiver, but he also played kind of like the running quarterback. He would come in to do draw plays and stuff. So you had both of them playing quarterback. Our offense in 2009, this was the thing that really jumped out at me the most rewatching this game. I also rewatched the Iron Bowl from 2009 just to get a sense of what all we were doing there. The reason I've been rewatching all these 2009 games is not just for this episode tonight. I just finished putting together the 2009 season on We Believe for episode 9. So all this season is relatively fresh on my mind right now. The offense in 2009 was very hurry up, very misdirection, lots of trickery, way more of that stuff than Gus does now. I mean, it's like every other play we ran in 2009 was some kind of a reverse, double reverse, pass, you know, lots of people touching the ball on every play. It was lots of misdirection and confusion that we've more or less quit doing with Gus as the head coach. So did that jump out at you at all, the way the offense worked compared to now?
Yes. And a lot of that stuff, I think a lot, it's because a lot of that stuff was slower developing.
Yeah.
And I think it's the kind of things that worked well against lesser defenses, but not against the better SEC defenses. So a lot of that slower developing stuff we've kind of stopped doing.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that back then it was still newer and defenses didn't know how to cope with it. Whereas within a couple of years, they pretty much figured some stuff out and we had to be more straight ahead. And I think we're much more straight ahead and much less sort of side to side misdirection now. Yeah. So Auburn was the number two rushing team in the country after two games coming into this game. Now, we had played Louisiana Tech and Mississippi State, but get this, in those two games, our offense had rung up 86 points, and we were averaging 43 points a game. Both running backs were averaging over 100 yards a game. So that you had to feel pretty good about our offense in September of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, I mentioned the running backs, you also, and the quarterback. We also had it catching passes. We had Darvin Adams. For some reason it says Darwin, but Darvin Adams. And we had Tommy Trott at tight end. We had, of course, Terrell Zachary, T-Zach at receiver. I tell you, again, they're not necessarily the greatest we've ever had, but I loved Darvin Adams and Terrell Zachary. They were great this year, and they were great for Cam.
Absolutely. Really, really underrated. Darvin Adams, watching this game again, this was his highlight tape game.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize that either until we watched it. Darvin Adams was kind of the Courtney Taylor of this team, and Terrell Zachary was kind of the Devin Aromashadu of this team. You know, you had the big possession guy that could go over the middle and get you the first down, or the red zone touchdown in this case, and then you had the guy that could streak down the sideline. I mean, I don't think Terrell Zachary in his entire career at Auburn, I don't think he ever caught a pass that was more than 5 yards away from the sideline. he was the side. Do you ever remember Terrell Zachary catching a ball in the middle of field?
No.
And then there was one other player that was catching passes way more than I remembered, and that was Eric Smith, the fullback.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this. Eric Smith, I mean, I guess every team needs that enforcer, that guy that is ready to start a fight any moment. You have to be careful about that. Now, you know, it's one of those things that it's a hand grenade. It can either go off in your lap or it can go off in the enemy's lap. You know what I mean? And Eric Smith is one of those guys that he's the enforcer that would get in the face of the other team if they start like thinking they could push you around. And you need that. You absolutely need that. To show you got guts and chutzpah and you're not going to be pushed around. He could also get you a personal foul call. he's, you know, if we had an award, I think we still have the Eric Smith Tough Guy Award?
We do.
Yeah. I mean, this, you see why now. Because, I mean, if there was ever a player that you could see punching a referee in the face, I could see Eric Smith totally doing that, you know. I mean, he'd be like, yeah, kick me out, but I punched him in the face. So, he played an important role on this team, just giving them that dude you don't mess with kind of, you know, personality. And I think that was very valuable. That's very valuable. So, let's see. So that's pretty much what's going on for Auburn going into this game.
You forgot one important piece that plays a role in this game.
Oh, you mean Wes Byram?
Mario Fannin.
Oh, Mario, Super Mario, of course. Yeah, two players I neglected to mention. You're right. So, yeah, Mario Fannin is our other running back. He was going to come up when we talk about 2008 very briefly. Yes, you're absolutely right that Fannin was – because you kind of forget with Thunder and Lightning back there, you forget that Fannin had kind of gone from being the number one running back to like the number three or something. So what was that all about? What do you remember about Fannin's role between years? I can't even remember.
I mean, I think he competed and Tate won the job, but I think Gus looked at him and immediately thought kind of like third down pass catching running back
slot receiver
kind of guy.
I agree. All right, so tell us about West Virginia at this point.
All right, so West Virginia again, this was Bill Stewart was the head coach. They were coming out of the Rich Rodriguez era. They had had several years of a lot of success. leading up to this, including the Sugar Bowl where they kicked Georgia's rear end, and the game where Stuart Cook over was the famous Fiesta Bowl where they beat Oklahoma. And Auburn had played them the very first time ever the year before, 2008, in Morgantown, and I went to that game.
Oh, I didn't realize you were there. Wow, okay.
Yes, my dad and I went, and some of my friends from work went, and we lost that game in Morgantown. Auburn was ahead 17-3, and then West Virginia just came back and ran us out of the building, basically. But
it was kind of the opposite of this game, wasn't it?
100% the opposite, exactly. Yeah. It was Tuberville was the head coach. It was right after Tony Franklin did the clean out the office thing and left. Ensminger was the interim offensive coordinator. Cody Burns was the quarterback, but really I think our defense kind of held them early, and then kind of the dam burst and we couldn't stop them.
Yeah.
And that the 2008 team had Pat White with Noel Devine and a couple other guys, and the 2009 team, Pat White was gone and they replaced him with this other quarterback, Jarrett Brown.
Let me interrupt you for just a second here, because I just want to point out about Jarrett Brown. I was waiting for you to mention him. I thought he was not a bad quarterback, and I thought he was kind of in the Cam Newton prototypical role. But here's the thing, John. I felt like he actually highlights how special Cam was, because, if you look at Cam, you think, well, he was special because he was big and strong. Well, Jarrett Brown was big and strong, and Jarrett Brown could throw the ball about as well as Cam could probably, and he wasn't slow, but he wasn't Cam Newton. And in this game, he makes mistakes that Cam wouldn't have made, So yeah. I just think it shows that it wasn't just that Cam was big and strong and fast and could throw the ball. He had special skills and abilities as an Auburn quarterback that some other guy, the same size, the same general configuration, in other words, there have been a lot of running backs the size of Bo Jackson, but there haven't been a lot of Bo Jacksons, It's kind of the same thing here. There have been other quarterbacks that were 6 foot whatever and 250 pounds and whatever, but you watch Brown in this game and you see what Cam could have been if he wasn't Cam, okay?
That's fair. I mean, and we're going to talk a lot about Brown as this game goes along.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the biggest thing from the leading up to this game. West Virginia was good. Again, they were coming off these big bowl games and stuff, but I think Stuart was replacing Rich Rod, and I think Rich Rod was the guy behind the real magic there. And Stuart, you talked about nice guys. I think Stuart was a very, very nice guy, and also not a real stickler for team discipline, and ended up kind of biting him again and again.
Yeah, he wasn't their first choice, right? But the players and the community like him and just kind of like put the pressure on the university?
Where Rich Rod left and took the job, the Michigan job, and this guy was the interim coach in the bowl game where they beat Oklahoma.
Yeah. So there was a groundswell. There was a groundswell.
It was like, we got to hire him. We beat Oklahoma.
Yeah. And you always look at that kind of thing and go, but one game does not a career make, and you can't predict. It's better to go with the body of work than the one. I mean, it's just like it's how we ended up with Franklin, number five quarterback. Rhett Lashley went down to that Mississippi school the week he had that huge game. But if you looked at his body of work, you'd have been like, is he really a Division I quarterback? So, yeah, but all right. So it rained, and as ESPN delighted in reminding us every 5 minutes for the whole rest of the game, John, did you know that the game was delayed for over an hour because of the downpour? We should show some more footage of that. Look at all that water. Wow. But
there were three clips again and again.
Oh, again and again. But there was more to it than that. So talk a little bit about the situation with the rain and the fans and the field and all that, because there's a lot of interesting stuff that goes into that.
So the biggest thing was that it wasn't 100% chance of rain that day. The forecast was for a chance of scattered afternoon, evening thunderstorms.
Wow.
But it wasn't like 80% and it's going to monsoon or anything. It was a very kind of sudden and localized thunderstorm. And the afternoon was very pleasant, for a September football game. So the But as the teams are warming up, these black clouds started rolling in as they got closer to kickoff. And as fans were coming into the stadium, the students were already there, of course, these black clouds just start rolling over the stadium, and the bottom drops out and there's lightning nearby. So they send the teams to the locker room and they delay the game because of the lightning. And then they tell fans, hey, you can leave. We'll let you back in. You can go in the concourses or whatever. And they said to fans at a certain point, you can leave the stadium and we'll let you back in. We're not even going to check, basically. And so one of the side effects of this is eventually when everybody comes back in, they're not checking because of this rain thing. And I believe this is the game that had the highest total attendance ever, maybe at Auburn, because I think everybody in the area heard, oh, they're not checking tickets. And all the students are like, well, I'm just going. So I don't even have a ticket. So I think I don't know this for a fact. I mean, maybe probably one of the Alabama games there was more, but I think there's a chance this ended up being a really high attendance number because so many people jammed in. And there are probably some people that left in the upper decks, whatever, that balances out. But that's just a theory. So
that's pretty funny.
The biggest thing about the rain is that the students and a lot of the fans stayed in the stadium. The PA announcer played a bunch of rain themed music, the fame, like, who, you know, have you ever seen the rain and all that kind of stuff. And there's famous videos of the students all standing and singing in the rain, you know, and the team was in the locker room and they could hear it, you know.
That's
they're
cool.
Resting, waiting for the lightning and stuff to clear. And if, you know, the students didn't go shelter or whatever, they stayed out there and sang in the rain and danced in the rain and stuff. And they got absolutely soaked. And one of the stories I was reading this week said that, like, many of the students, their phones got destroyed because it was like inches and inches of rain. And they were so wet that the phones just got completely soaked and got ruined. Go ahead.
I don't want to mess up your story. I wasn't sure if you were going to. Wasn't there a second part of that? I remember seeing it.
Well, the other part is that, you know, eventually the rain starts to slow down and the rain stops.
So that it actually rained again the next week. I feel like maybe somebody on Twitter said this to us this afternoon, that then it rained again the next week and people are like, oh, the phones are all going to get destroyed again. But they all had them in Ziploc bags this time. They learned their lesson. Which I thought was pretty good.
Very smart.
Yeah.
It only has to happen to you once. So.
Yeah.
but the biggest thing is that, like, this, again, we talked about what did 2009 mean in Chiswick and the new era and hope and all this. And this was a big piece of it. Because, again, the fans were making a statement to the team that, you know, it's a home game and we're excited and we're going to bring it. And the team heard that. The team got it. You know what I'm saying? They felt it. And I think it made a difference in this game.
Yeah.
And the famous thing afterward is Chiswick said in the post-game press conference, he said, I wish I had 87,000 game balls because I would give every one of those fans a game ball.
Yeah, I think this is that moment where they show it in a lot of clips later. Like all the way through the 2010 season when they did the All I Do Is Win video feature, you know. I think that this is where they show Chiswick saying the fans were a huge part of that game tonight.
Yes.
I think that was that moment. Yeah. I wanted to point out. Oh, go ahead.
And the other thing, again, is like that the field was fine all through the game. I mean, we got 3 inches of rain in an hour or whatever, and the field was fine.
And you're going to tell us why, but I just wanted to point out how bizarre this is and how it showed a tribute to our field and our groundskeepers. Is that during the BCS game the next year in Arizona, they're in the desert, John. They're in the desert, and our players and the Oregon players were just falling down because the grass was so slick. And yet in a stadium where there had been a foot of rain 10 minutes earlier, people were not falling down at all.
That's right. And it's just a great design, great engineering on that field that did it. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah. So... And ESPN picked up on it. I mean, that's one of those where you're glad it's on TV, because those announcers, lacking much else to talk about before kickoff, they kept cutting in and showing, you know, we're going to get you to the Auburn game soon, but it's a monsoon currently, and they show the fans all there and the water just like a Niagara Falls coming down out of the stadium. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you my story from the Florida 95 game, very quick, very short story, that my roommate and I in 1995 went to the Florida game in Auburn, and it was a game that in the first quarter poured down rain. Everybody was in the ponchos and everything, and then after the first quarter it pretty much dried up. It didn't rain, but just the very beginning of that game. And so we're going on halftime, and my roommate and I have still got our ponchos on, and we're getting wet, and I'm suddenly realizing, I'm like, how come we're the only people in the stadium that are getting rained on? Everybody else has gotten rid of their ponchos and the sun is shining, and we're still getting rained on. And I turned around and looked up, and we are right under the center of the upper deck, and its drain is coming right down on us. The one place that water was still running in the stadium was us on our heads from the upper deck. So we just got up. We were like so embarrassed. We just got to get up and move. All right, so let's break this one down a little bit. The first quarter, my gosh, is a track meet by itself. It's the final score of a lot of games, 21-10. But just to kind of walk through it a little bit, I just felt like in the first quarter especially, West Virginia was methodical. They really were the whole rest of the game, but especially in the first quarter, the thing that came to my mind is they were just methodical. They mixed the run and the pass. Their offensive line was holding up pretty well. Brown was throwing the ball pretty well in the first half. Devine was just absolutely as untackleable as he had been the previous year. He was running all over us. We couldn't slow their offense down. They'd get 5 yards, 8 yards, 3 yards, 5 yards, 8 yards, just clipping right down the field and score. We could not get the ball. We could not get the running game going at all. All we had was the occasional pass, and it looked like, even in the second half, our offense looked like that desperate offense that is just trying to find something that works, right? Our offense, even with Gus and all of his stuff going on, in this game, to the very end in this game, our offense never really looked like it had a cohesive, comprehensive game plan. It looked like it was just trying stuff to try to make a first down, just trying to find something that would work that would keep the drives going. And occasionally they would, and occasionally they wouldn't. And it occurred to me after watching this game again, this is not a game that gets compared to a lot, but in some ways, this game reminds me of the LSU interception game, where we had almost no offense, but the other team did, and yet little things kept happening that kept us in the game, including a lot of defensive plays, right? Does that seem like that way to you?
That's fair. That makes sense to me. The other thing that I mean, watching the beginning, the first quarter of this game again, the 2009 Auburn defense was really bad at tackling. And yeah, if you've watched, you know, we've been sitting for 2 years, 3 years watching Kevin Steele defense and how well coached they are and how good at tacklers in space they are. To go back and watch 2009, it's hard. The first quarter of this game, you undersold it. West Virginia averaged 15 yards a play.
Good God.
They shredded us, and we couldn't tackle them. We couldn't tackle Devine to save our lives.
I think the reason that I undersold it is because even though they averaged 15 yards a play, they got a lot of it from one big play. So they were clicking out 5 to 10 yards a carry or a pass, and then you throw in that one big play where he went 79 yards on one touch on a 9-second drive, it does skew the numbers quite a bit. I was going to say the other reason I don't think this game reminds us at first of the interception LSU game, but it is because in the LSU interception game, it was our DBs that were intercepting the ball and running them back in spectacular fashion for touchdowns. Whereas in this game, it's our defensive linemen intercepting the passes. So you don't get quite that same spectacular run all over the field. You get kind of like a rumble up the middle for a short yardage game, but it's pretty similar. So all right, so they make a methodical five-play drive, get a touchdown, and then they get a 71-yard play. So after basically six plays, they're up 14-0, and our fans, who have, like you said, have been there through thick and thin, are kind of shell-shocked. We then go on a 38-yard drive and kick a field goal 14-3. We're not even halfway through the first quarter yet. And then we get a good old Darvin Adams 16-yard touchdown on a six-play drive that started on their 45. And so it's 14-10. But then Brown comes back and goes on an eight-play, 74-yard drive and hits Jock Sanders for a six-yard touchdown. And so as we end the first quarter, we're down 21-10 in the first quarter. We've given up three touchdowns just in the first quarter. And I'm sitting here watching it going, how do we ever win this game? If we're giving up like 200 yards of offense and three touchdowns in the first quarter, we're dead. Yes. But that's...
And coming off the way that the 2008 game ended, remember they kind of exploded yes. on us in 2008. Had coming in 2009, it was like they just picked up where they left off. And it's like we had no solution.
Yeah, if they do that again this game, we're going to lose 80-10. Yeah, and if you think about it, this is kind of the way that the 2010 team would often start. We would give up big drives and big pass plays in the first quarter and then kind of settle down in the second half. So that's just kind of a Ted Roof thing for some reason, right, is that we had good personnel, we had a good defense, but they just didn't get off the bus, get through Tiger Walk until like the late second quarter or third quarter. It's just weird how that was. So, all right, so we go into the second quarter, and there's an exchange that makes you think it's just going to get out of hand, where Cody Burns fumbles the handoff. He's in at quarterback at the start of the second quarter. He fumbles the handoff, somehow gets the ball back. So Chris Todd comes in and throws an interception. So then Jarrett Brown comes in and throws it to Nico Thorpe. And you got to be hurting. All respect to Nico Thorpe, but he's not our most feared defensive back in Auburn history, is he?
But this Nico Thorpe play, I really thought was the turning point of the game.
Okay.
I think this is the point where, we turn the ball over, and they had it in good field position here. Like the Chris Todd interception was like at our 30 or something.
Yeah, right? It was about to be 28-10.
That's right. And really thought this is the hole, and that Nico Thorpe interception prevented it, and we kind of turned it around, I think, at that moment.
Yeah, that's good. That's right. And so we come back, we hit Eric Smith, we hit Tommy Trott. Byram, I believe, ends up kicking a field goal here, a 42-yard field goal, 21-13. Then we go on another 68-yard drive in only a minute 23. We really hurry up Auburn fast. And Darvin Adams catches his second touchdown. So with a minute 34 to go in the second quarter, Darvin Adams already has two touchdown catches. And with the extra point, we're only down 21-20. It did not seem at halftime like we should only be down 1 point. I'm thinking, man, if I'm West Virginia at this point, I'm thinking, if I'm not looking at the scoreboard and if I'm West Virginia at halftime and you ask me what the score is, I'm like, oh, I don't know, but I think we must be leading by at least 14, right? I mean, it felt like West Virginia was killing us, and yet it was 21-20.
Yes.
And we had
50. Their first quarter, our second quarter, kind of.
Yeah, it's true. We're the only team that scored in the second quarter, and they would only score two more times in the game, which just seems insane right now. But also, we only had 50 yards of rushing in the entire first half. They had 124. So
that's the thing. McCaleb got zero in this game.
Yeah.
The rushing yards we had were basically all Tate.
Yeah. Yeah, it was all Tate blasting up the middle or off tackle. Otherwise, it was not happening. 50 yards. McCaleb was losing yards in this game. You could tell that they were coming in looking for him.
Yeah, they were keying on that.
But the passing game, we had 159 yards passing. So the total yards at the half were West Virginia 291, which is not a good sign. But we had
200 yards at the half.
At the half, 291 at the half. But we had 209, which isn't horrible. So, we're less than 100 yards behind them and turning the ball over from them. So why don't we pause there for just a second, and we'll finish the game in just a second. But we do got to have to thank our patrons who keep shows like this on the air. For as little as $1 a month, you can join our patrons and make shows like this possible, because we have bills to pay, And you guys make it possible that we can do it. We're doing this show. We're doing our James Bond shows. We're doing the White Rocket show. Alan and I do our racing movie reviews. And we're not really doing any racing shows right now, obviously. But we just reviewed Ford versus Ferrari. We reviewed Grand Prix with James Garner a couple of months ago. Alan and I are getting ready to review, the one with Thor and Baron Zemo in it. You know what I'm talking about? No. There's a Chris Hemsworth and the guy that played Baron Zemo in the Avengers Age of Ultron. Anyway, I can't think of his name.
Are you talking about? Oh, I thought it's a different movie.
Yes. Yeah, it's a racing. Yeah. It's a Formula One racing movie about James Hunt and Niki Lauda, and I can never miss. It's got like a very generic title. I think Ron Howard directed it. Maybe even. It's a really good movie, but not many people have seen it. It's a really fun movie about a rivalry in like the late 70s, early 80s or something. I can't remember offhand. I don't know the history of the Formula One as well as I should. But in any case, it's either called like Quick or Speed or it's Rush. Rush. That's it. Rush. Yeah. See, it's got like a generic name I can never remember. Well, in any case, we're doing shows like that. And for as little as a dollar a month, you can help us to do them, including the AU Wishbone and We Believed. And if you are an AU Wishbone Patreon member, you get early access to the We Believe shows, and you also get to do cool stuff like a cool thing we're going to do tomorrow, John, that I'm looking forward to. So here are the folks keeping our show on the air currently. Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson. We have Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trevick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trevick, and Richard Stevens. And then we have William Morgan, WDE Richie, Winston Boddy, Clinton Stewart, Christopher Stewart, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Alchemist Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson and Kanjian, Catherine England and George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Timothy Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson and Rich Reimer. I gotta say, I had a really hoarse voice yesterday. This is so much easier when my voice is not hurting. I'm not 100% right now, but man, yesterday I was trying to do this for the Avengers show that David Wright and I did, and I sounded horrible. This is much better. Blake Heron, Hugh Anderson, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Milling, Kevin Kinoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Shane Bailey, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, and C.T. Wayne. And finally, we've got Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Mick Vigicana, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brendan Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds. We're getting close to the end, folks, I promise. Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland. That's the truth, Ruth. Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Chris Brant Rumble, our anonymous, awesome patrons, and our one-time and occasional ones like Surfer Chickify. We thank you all. John, you go to www.auwishbone.com and you sign up. And you help us out, and we call your name out, and you get to do cool stuff like the thing we're going to do tomorrow, which, as you're listening to this, is probably today on Tuesday. So let us get back to things here. We were going into the third quarter. Thoughts at halftime. John has left us.
We played better in the second quarter.
There we are.
Than we did in the first quarter, but we still, you know, we're behind, and we hadn't really, really stopped them. So. No. But in the end, like you pointed out, we weren't running the ball. We were a running team, and we weren't having success running the ball, which we know can bode ill.
Here's a little spoiler of where this is all going. When the game is over, West Virginia will be leading by more than 100 yards in total yards, total offense. They will be leading in time of possession. and they will be leading in first downs. They will also, John, be leading massively in turnovers.
Wah, wah, wah.
So, the third quarter, West Virginia comes out, goes down the field. In fact, we lost 10 yards and punt, and then they did their methodical thing. They seem much better of a better team. Devine is running all over the place. We can't stop him. And they score to go up 27-20, but they missed the extra point. Now, that could have been important if we hadn't tacked on a score later, but it could have been very important. They missed the extra point.
At the moment, it seemed very important.
Yes. I mean, this game could have ended 28-27 if we score a touchdown right now, and that's all the scoring there is left. Yeah, absolutely. But here's the thing, and this really highlights something. West Virginia is dominating this game, but they keep making key little mistakes that are adding up and keeping us in the game. And now the game it reminds me of in some ways is those Florida games in the 1990s where Florida clearly had a better offense than us, but they would get a personal foul or they would throw an interception or they would just do little things like that, you know, that would just keep us in the game until we could come down at the end. So the other thing the announcers keep talking about is not just the rain delay. They also keep telling us over and over how Brown waited 4 long years behind Pat White to be the starting quarterback. And at the end of this game, I'm happy we win, but I'm like, man, not only did he wait all that time and then lose, and he's the main reason that they lost, as you're about to see, but he even gets hurt in this game and doesn't even finish the game. So, you know, he goes from the success story narrative coming in to like this sad, you know, 60 minutes later, it's like, wah, wah. I feel kind of bad. What did you think about Brown in this game and the mistakes and the injury and all that?
I think it's a case of kind of live by the swashbuckling quarterback and die by the swashbuckling quarterback. He made a lot of plays for them, breaking containment, getting outside the pocket, throwing on the run, you know, making plays on by himself, running, keeping the ball around the end and stuff, and you know, broken plays, and then also keeping plays alive and finding guys downfield. But he was carrying they pointed out again and again in the game, and it's true that he was carrying the ball recklessly in the middle of traffic, and some of the throws he made were reckless. And this is going to be a problem for him as Auburn adjusts and Auburn kind of gets a beat on him as the game goes along, that the plays that he liked to do, Auburn was kind of ready for him at the end of the game.
Isn't it funny that they kept showing how he was just holding the ball in his fingertips out from his body when he was running? And it just, you could just tell something bad was coming. And yet he does turn the ball over a bunch in this game, but it's never that. It's like you said, it ended up not being the way he was carrying the ball, which could very well have led to turnovers.
Just lucky that wasn't over.
Yes. It ended up being his poor judgment at throwing the ball into places he shouldn't have thrown. When we got pressure on him, he made mistakes. He's really the classic example of a quarterback that physically has all the tools, but when you can get some pressure on him in the pocket, he makes a mistake. And this is something I wanted to ask you about him too. They had him passing the ball, and occasionally they had him running the ball. But it never seemed to me that he had the option that Cam used to have the next season after this, of just turning it upfield and going. And it seemed like they almost never. I don't remember a single time that there was like a designed run play for him. Now you could say, well, they had Noel Devine. Well, we had, you know, Cam had a whole bunch of running backs. And yet, he carried the ball more than any of them. So what did you think about the way they used him? It just seemed to me like he should have put his head down and made a few first downs instead of them going to the shovel pass or him looking downfield and getting pressured and throwing an interception.
And it may be that he really didn't like contact, you know what I'm saying?
Maybe.
That he was much more comfortable outside running away from people and stuff. So.
Yeah. It seemed that way. I wonder how much of it was him and how much of it was the offensive game plan just didn't use him.
I think it's some of that, too.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like if the offensive coordinator of West Virginia had been in charge of Cam in 2010, Cam wouldn't have had a Heisman season. Mm-hmm. He'd have had a good season, but it wouldn't have been, you know what I mean? Because he wouldn't have had those 1,000-yard rushing or whatever. I don't think he would have. So, well, anyway, so So Auburn gets the ball, and it's 27-20 West Virginia. We're still in the third quarter. And Chris Todd hits Mario Fannin on a little dump pass in the flat. What does Super Mario do, John?
He weaves his way through traffic and runs away from everybody. He was always a great straight line, fast guy. He was a good kickoff returner for that reason, and he just takes the pass and sprints by everybody for the touchdown.
Yeah, he was a good open field running back. He just wasn't a guy you give the ball to and say dive into the pile, because if you do, the ball's probably going to end up on the ground.
Yes.
How many times did you and I lament, don't give the ball to Fannin?
He fumbled the ball in the first half of this game, and I was like, oh, wow, I've seen that play before.
There we see, yeah, we've seen this movie before a few times. All right, so believe it or not, after everything that's gone on this game, we kicked the extra point at old Wesley Byram, and it's 27-27. I actually wrote down in my notes, I have no idea how this game is tied now. I've been watching the game, and if you never showed me a scoreboard and I was just watching the game, and at this point you said, what's the score? I just said the score is like 42-21 or something. It just felt like they were killing us. And it's 27-27. And they get a field goal at the end of the, toward the end of the quarter to go up 30-27. But again, here's a spoiler. They will not score again. They're up three, but we have a whole quarter to go. And whereas in the first quarter, we couldn't even slow them down, in the fourth quarter, their offense just disappears.
Well, it's interesting. Kind of both halves, they start out red hot and then got colder and colder. In the second half, especially, they're very hot at the beginning of the third quarter and then gets worse.
Yeah, that's right. They scored a touchdown to open the game. They scored a touchdown to open the second half. But in both cases, you're right. Get this. In the second quarter, we're the only team that scored. And in the fourth quarter, we're the only team that scored.
That's right.
That's crazy. And yet it feels like they dominated. This is a strange game.
I think there's something else here about the 2009 team laying a foundation of a team that adjusts and comes back.
Yeah. That's fair. So I did break it down by quarter. The first quarter was 21-10. God, 21-10 West Virginia. The second quarter was 10-0 Auburn. And the third quarter was 7-6 Auburn. And the fourth quarter is going to be...
You want me to tell you?
We went from
14-0 Auburn.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how we got 8 points on 2 touchdowns. We went from 27-41. I was looking at 33. So, yeah, we won and we scored the fourth quarter 14-0. So, yeah, we won the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter. Crazy. Okay, so they'd go on another drive. They're methodically using up time and using up yardage, but it ends because they get in the red zone and they just keep throwing the ball. And we're able to cover their receivers in the second half. Like, this is the same story you'd see all in 2010, right? In the first half, we give up all kind of passes. In the second half, we lock down the receivers and start getting pressure from guys like Nick Fairley. There were a couple of Nick Fairley sightings in this game. Mm-hmm. He's not quite the Hulk yet like he'd be in 2010, but he made his presence known in the second half of this game. It's like in the second half, we suddenly start actually playing defensive pass coverage, and our defensive line starts getting pressure. And so Brown ends up throwing the ball like out of bounds a couple of times rather than just think about if they just given the ball to Noel Devine a couple of times there. Mm-hmm. But instead, he just throws it away. He doesn't run. He doesn't give it to Devine. He just throws it out of bounds. And so they end up punting or kicking or they miss a field goal or I don't know. But in any case, at this point, ESPN puts up the statistic that I thought was interesting, where the game is still completely in doubt. You don't know who's going to win. And ESPN notes that when scoring 30 or more points, West Virginia has won 60 of its last 61 games. And when scoring 30 or more points, Auburn has won 51 straight games. So at this point, Auburn has 27, but that's an interesting statistic. You feel like one of those two statistics is gonna get messed up before the night is over at this point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So Adams gets hurt catching a first down pass at the end of the quarter. And you think, uh-oh, how are we going to ever have any offense in the fourth quarter without him? But he will be back. So you can raise your fingers, John. We go to the fourth quarter down 30-27. So even though Auburn won every quarter after the first quarter, we're still losing. And now they do that thing. This is another huge turning point in this game, like you talked about with Nico Thorpe. Todd is in the – it's fourth down. This is a thing that – for whatever,
yes, I had
Gus
I
loves
had 2019 Iron Bowl flashback during this play.
I know this is a play that Gus loves, and I remember us running it three times, and it only worked once. Fortunately, that was in the Iron Bowl, the comeback. But we do it here, and we do it against Georgia in 2010, and it fails both times. It's where the quarterback looks like he's going to pooch punt, mm-hmm. and instead he just throws a pass out wide to the receiver. This one was incomplete. It'll be incomplete when Cam does it the next, you know, against Georgia. But finally, we completed against Alabama for a first down. I can kind of see the idea. This play is you make the defense think that you're going to kick, and then you have your receiver just really quickly run out to the first down marker, catch the ball, and fall out of bounds. You know, it's about as safe of a pass play as you could run because you're throwing it to the outside shoulder and everything, but. It just, for some reason, it worked one time out of three. So, but we turned the ball over. We've just given West Virginia the ball an hour into the field. But what does West Virginia then do right back?
Interception.
Yeah. This is the first of two ill-advised shovel passes. And by the way, you really shouldn't throw the shovel pass overhanded, especially when you're like a 6.5 foot tall quarterback, because it's coming down at a really severe angle. It's supposed to be like a forward lateral behind the line of scrimmage, and instead it's like it coming down at a 45 degree angle, and in both cases, more or less, it bounces off the running back's hands and right into the arms of one of our linemen. Jake Ricks catches it and rumble bumble stumbles to the 19 yard line, and then on 3rd and 8, after nothing is working, we throw the ball to an injured Darvin Adams. Touchdown Auburn. Darvin Adams with three touchdowns, and it is 34-30. This is the first time Auburn has led the game, believe it or not. We're up 34-30, and we have half of our points directly off West Virginia turnovers. And one more thing, I want to get your thoughts. At this point in the game, West Virginia has almost 200 yards rushing, and we have 75. So we had 50 yards rushing in the first half, and we've got, at this point, 25 more, and yet we are now up 34-30. What are you thinking now?
I mean, I'm thinking we're ahead, but we can't run the ball. It's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, we're ahead. There's plays further on in the fourth quarter. We're ahead, and it's like, we're trying to run the clock, but we have to throw the ball because we can't get a first down just running it at them.
And this is where West Virginia goes and pulls out Curly Hallman's 1994 LSU playbook, because they've just thrown an interception, kind of. I mean, it's technically an interception, even though it's really like a – it's really more like a fumble recovery in midair, but, yeah, it's an interception. And so West Virginia's just driving again. They're down in our red zone. They get down to our 12-yard line, and Brown just decides that Walter McFadden is like the most eligible receiver for West Virginia and hits him right in the hands. And
he
McFadden
overthrows the West Virginia guy by 5 yards or whatever.
Oh, it was not even close to anybody from West Virginia. McFadden goes blazing back down the other direction. Now, holding is, it looks like it's going to be a great return, and it is, but they call holding at the beginning of it. And so instead of starting on like their 3-yard line, we start on our 3-yard line. But we have a great third down conversion on our 9 that goes to Eric Smith, the fullback. And I've already made the point that it just looks like we're just grasping at straws at this point, but it's working. Now Ben Tate starts making some rushing yards finally in the fourth quarter. They get a face mask on him, and so suddenly the ball has gone from our 3 to the West Virginia 42. But that drive used up a lot of the fourth quarter, kept their offense off the field. Eventually it sputters out and we punt. And so now the clock is all the way down to just 3:53. They don't have as much time as they could, right? That drive used up some precious time and got the ball off of our goal line, got it away, got it on the other side of the field. Thank goodness, right? I mean, that was a very important drive, even though it ended with a punt. But they've now got the ball back with plenty of time to go down and score and win the game. And what do they do, John?
Interception again.
The same play. The shovel pass. It's like if they said, we need to draw up a play where our quarterback throws the ball overhanded to the defensive lineman, and it worked perfectly both times. It's like it went straight to him. And Craig Stevens this time, I mean, this is a game, John, where interceptions are made by Jake Ricks and Craig Stevens. I defy you to find me another game in Auburn history where Jake Ricks and Craig Stevens both have interceptions, and it's a pick six for Craig Stevens.
That's a great play. He intercepts it and just goes firing straight ahead past the West Virginia backfield into the end zone.
Before they even realize what's happened, yeah. Was he a linebacker?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So a defensive lineman, I think, the first time. This time a linebacker. So now with McFadden, you have every position, every level of the defense has intercepted one pass. The defensive line has one. The linebackers have one. And the corners, the defensive backs have one. That is, and I've noted, this is starting to seem like LSU 1994. It's not starting to. It has. So it's 41-30 Auburn. We've got like 75 yards, but we've probably got about 100 yards of rushing offense at this point. And we're up 41-30. Here's another game it reminds me of. It's reminding me of the 2006 Florida game where the offense barely scored, and yet we won 20-something to 10 or 15 or whatever. So just crazy. And I made a note here. It just shows you that a defense that gives up a lot of yards but also creates turnovers and can score on defense, that kind of defense can be at least as valuable as a defense that just shuts offenses down but never turns a ball over, never scores. So I would refer you, like, we have made a good argument, I think, tonight that this was not a great Auburn defense in 2009. I would say the 1994 Auburn defense was not a great Auburn defense. But you know what this defense did and what the 1994 defense did? They turned the ball over and they found ways to score themselves without the offense. And that can be huge, because our defense last year, if we could have gotten just one defensive score against Georgia last year, that game goes to overtime. Mm-hmm. So think about this. I mean, in the Georgia game last year, we held Georgia to 21 and we lost because the defense didn't score. Now, in the Alabama game, the defense gave up 45 points and yet we won, and it was largely because the defense turned the ball over and scored. And you may recall, in the weeks leading up to the Iron Bowl last year, I got in hot water with some of our listeners, probably as much as I ever have on this show, because I made the comments. You remember this? I made the comments that as great as our defense was at stopping the other team last year, I said, look, there comes a time when you have to realize you're not just in a vacuum, right? The defense's job is to find ways to help win the game. And I'm like, I hate to put any more on you because you're already doing great work stopping the offense of the other team, but you're not turning the ball over and scoring enough. Maybe that's not fair, but life isn't fair. If your offense isn't scoring as much as you need it to, then I'm sorry, defense, but it behooves you to take up the slack. And so people got so mad at me. How dare you attack our defense? They're doing great. They're working their tails off. And I'm like, yeah, no doubt about it. The defense is great. The problem is they need, I mean, you know, when the season's over and we've lost to Georgia and lost to Alabama, they can look back and say, well, hey, we sure did limit that other team to not that many first downs and not that many yards. That's great. You lost. You know? I mean, I'd rather you give up 45 points in a win than give up 21 in a loss. And you know, after the Iron Bowl, nobody said a dang thing to me. That was it. They shut up. So, all right. West Virginia has turned the ball over at this point five times, four of which at least led to Auburn scores, three in the second half, mostly in the fourth quarter. Nick Fairley, and then Brown gets hurt. It may be when Nick Fairley landed. I think it was Nick Fairley landed on him, wasn't it? And hurt his hand. And so we get Geno Smith, the late, who would later be, you know, famous. And he throws the interception. Again, here's just a note to West Virginia. When the playbook says Love, comma, Curly Hallman on it, you need to find a different playbook. Need to find another playbook.
Listen, to be compared to the 94 LSU game is a mark of shame for an offensive
player. Yes. Six turnovers in this game for West Virginia. One for Auburn. I mean, it really shows you how you can lose first downs, you can lose time of possession, you can lose total yards, but if the other team gives you the ball six times, it's hard to lose. It's like, wasn't it your brother that said, how are we going to turn the ball over this many times and still lose the game? Has any team ever turned the ball over? You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Pat that said, he was worried that we were going to set some kind of record that we could turn the ball over that many times and still lose. Has any team ever, intercepted the ball five times and still lost the game? So that's a legit concern. All right, so Cody runs the clock out. 41-30 is the final score of the game. So you take us through the ending now. I'm exhausted.
It was 41-30. At the beginning of the game, it was 21-3. So a huge comeback for Auburn. Here's the last five West Virginia possessions, right? The very last possession ends with him running out of clock. The four before that are interception, 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 interception.
Wow. That's good. So
they scored the first, like as you pointed out, they scored the first two possessions in the second half and then never scored again.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think, it was big for Auburn to come back and win, to be down to a dangerous offensive team and to make plays, lots of guys making plays, not just one guy, lots of guys on defense, lots of guys on offense making plays, making stuff happen. I think, it was revenge for the 2018, but also it was kind of 2009. It felt like they were kind of building some stuff. They obviously weren't great. There were clear areas we needed to improve on. We
weren't running
the ball well against a good defense. We weren't, the tackling was problematic. But I think the fans that suffered through that 2008 season, to have an explosive, exciting team and to go through all the stuff with the rain and stuff and to get to this point and win the game, it just left a great feeling in everybody's mouth and a real joyous atmosphere at the end of this game.
It really was. Like I say, it just kind of was like the emblematic game of this whole season. We would later play really, really close losses to Georgia and Alabama, but they were the kind of losses that after the game you feel good about. You feel like, man, we were the lesser team, obviously, and yet, we went out there and did what we did against West Virginia, and we came so close to knocking Alabama off at the when they were number one and going to the national championship game that this game was like a microcosm of this season where sometimes it was down and sometimes it was up, but at the end you just feel excitement.
Oh yeah, no, it was definitely the kind of game that you left with a positive feeling as an Auburn fan. Like, it wasn't just a win. This was something.
It was special. It was special. So you had some comments from our listeners about it.
A few. So the first is from Bart Lindsay, who emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And he said, I've been going to Auburn home football games since the late 80s, and the 2009 West Virginia game is one of my all-time favorites. He says, I was living in Macon, Georgia at the time and drove over to meet my family for the game. Before the game, it started to rain and began to fall in buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started as a shower and became a deluge. He said, we exited our seats and took shelter under the stands, but I vividly remember the students were undeterred. None of them moved. They loudly sang songs like CCRs, Have You Ever Seen the Rain? And he said the rest of the family left, but he stayed, and he was so glad he did. They said Auburn and West Virginia played a game for the ages with big play after big play. He remembers Mario Fannin's sensational 82-yard TD catch and run, and the Auburn defense forcing all those turnovers, including Craig Stevens' pick six, to seal the win. He says he was drenched from head to toe. He celebrated with Auburn family all around me. and due to the weather delay and the length of the game, it was nearly midnight when the final horn sounded.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Where did you watch it? Were you watching it at home?
Day. I watched it at home here in Virginia.
So. My wife and I were trying to figure out. She first thought this was one where we had been down at SIU watching a game in Carbondale, and we were listening to it on the radio or on the internet on the way home. But I think that was – I remember the Clemson game in 2010 we ended up listening to that way. By the way, I don't know if we'll ever do that one or not, but I just want to point out I rewatched the Clemson 2010 game again this week too just for fun, and that's a game worth going – it's on YouTube. That's a game worth going back and watching again. I've watched that game so many times now. I still can't believe we won that game, and I still can't believe that Clemson was so competitive in that game. They played us better than anybody the whole season. But anyway,
this is a good point you're making about that game. That is a great game to redo. If you have listeners, if you have suggestions, and there's a game you want us to do, you're like, I want to hear y'all watch this game, give us your thoughts about it, then send us your comments and suggestions for other games. So I got a few other comments from fans. Auburn Elvis says, "I wore the outfit to this one, the Elvis outfit."
That's awesome.
He says, "It's white denim, so the thing must have absorbed 10 pounds of water. It was hard to move around with all that wet fabric, I'll tell you what." So
good gosh. Glad we won. Good gosh. I can't imagine.
Jacob Fleming said, "I love the outcome of the game, but that Ted Roof defense was painful to watch at times."
No kidding. Yeah, I called it. I replied back to him on that one. I said it was the bend, break, and then just pray for the offense defense.
100%. And one other fan, StoneMonkey01, replied and said, "I was so proud of the resiliency, not only of the Auburn fans, but also the well-engineered football field."
Yeah, we needed to talk about that. They had like gone in and really like set up super cool drainage systems for the field. And so they had like literally a foot of water came down on that field. And within a matter of minutes, it was all drained away because of how well it, you know, you didn't get lakes. You didn't get little depressions and pools and stuff and mud. You know, you could tell during the game that it was getting chopped up a little bit, but I've seen NFL fields that looked 1,000 times worse during a sprinkle.
Yes. No, it was an incredible feat of turf management. And the last comment is from my mom, who says, "It's one of the most miserable times at a game in Auburn, not a dry thread in my body, but one of the most glorious times at Jordan-Hare, seeing and hearing the students staying and cheering. I still have happy memory of it when I think about it. Looking forward to hearing the Wishbone talk about it."
So. Yeah. All right. Well, that was cool. Yeah. So let me reiterate, we definitely want your suggestions for as long as we'll be doing this. And the only thing I would add is, if at all possible, I would prefer it be one we can find video of. I've got video of quite a few games over the years, and of course there's YouTube, but if you say like the 1967 whatever, then you're going to need to like provide us a link, okay? Because I don't have that one. But otherwise, yeah, preferably one that we can get access to actually watch, because I don't remember everything about every game, just most things about most games, and I'm sure you're the same.
Well, I think this is a great one because, again, pre the podcast, we started the podcast at 12, so pre 2012. But I would say let's say anything between like, you know, whatever 82 and 2012. You pick a game in there that you want us to see it, we'll do it.
Yeah, but we get final decision because we're the ones that have to sit through 3 hours of it.
I've had some good ideas already.
Okay,
but we're open to maybe we'll do a poll or something. I don't know.
All right. Any final thoughts? I thought this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was fun, and I enjoyed watching the game again.
I did too. It's a good excuse. I'm like, oh, this is research right here. I have to do this. Are you watching a game again? Well, no, this is important. I have to get this down for the show. See? Wait, now you're watching Clemson. I thought you were doing West Virginia. Yeah. Just watching this one for fun. All right. Well, all right then. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle John.
War Eagle Van, and stay safe out there, everybody.
Second down and 10.
Brown takes the snap. Here comes the blitz. They'll just float it underneath. Pass is tipped. Intercepted. Stevens to the 10, to the 5. He's in. Touchdown, Tigers. Touchdown,
four.
Tigers.
Four turnovers.
How
four
about
turnovers.
It? 20 to 30.
That
Craig
may do
Stevens.
It,
Craig Stevens with the touchdown off the interception. Holy cow! Smith in the shotgun, drops back, steps up, underneath, intercepted at the 35-yard line by Josh Bynes, and he'll slide down at the 40. You can put this one in the books, wrap it up in orange and blue. The Tigers 41, West Virginia 30. And let's say this, after an hour delay, this crowd came right back. And let me tell you, they played their part tonight.
First of all, I'd like to say that I wish I had 87,000 game balls, because our fans were a huge reason we won that game, and I want them to know that. I know that we had thousands of students that stayed here through that whole thing. Everybody came early, and nobody left because of the weather, and I promise you that was one of the huge reasons we won the game.
As Auburn wins 41-30 to improve to 3-0 on the season.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.